Now, as the Apostle Paul tells us in verse 14, now thanks be to God, right away it becomes clear that what we have is someone to thank. It is a tragedy when there are those who express thankfulness, but they don't really have someone to thank. What would that be like? I remember a very popular group in the 70s and 80s. They sang a song, "Thank You for the Music." And I believe they were truly thankful. They were very well served by it. But they didn't mention anyone that they were thanking. I'm like, what must it be like to be thankful? He says, thanks be to God, who is God, but the giver and the sustainer of life. Life comes from Him. Life is a continuum, and God is eternal. And the life that we have comes from Him. He is the giver of life and the sustainer of life. But how sad it would be to sense thankfulness and yet not have anyone to thank. You may have heard the story of this gentleman who did not believe in God, and he was walking one early morning and out in the mountains, and he saw the beautiful sunrise, and just this feeling overcomes him, and he's just in awe of it. And he looks out to the grandeur of the mountains and the trees and the forests, and he's just, this is amazing. It's just so beautiful. And yet in the back of his mind, he has to keep reminding himself that all of this is just an accident. It just happened by chance. And as he was enjoying the beauty of it, all of a sudden he hears this rustle in the woods, and then there's a growl, and out steps the 7-foot grizzly. And he starts to run. Really hard to outrun a grizzly. And the grizzly was gaining on him, and just as the bear was about to pounce like this, its paws were up like this, the man cries out, "Oh God, help!" And time stops. And a voice comes to him, and he says, "You don't believe in me, and you think all of this beauty is just an accident, and yet now you call on me for help?" And the man says, "You know, that would be a bit hypocritical that I would all of a sudden become a Christian. Lord, is it possible that you could make the bear a Christian?" And God says, "Okay, done." And all of a sudden life starts again. And the bear that was like this all of a sudden puts his paws together and says, "Lord, for this meal that I'm about to eat, I'm truly thankful." Saint Francis of Assisi said, "The worst moment for the atheist is when he is truly thankful and has no one to thank. All goods look better when they look like gifts." And that is who God is it not? Ours is a benevolent Sovereign, the giver and sustainer of life. He is a benevolent sovereign. And this is what the scriptures teach us. James 1:17. Every good and perfect gift comes down from the Father. Not only does He give us gifts, but we know that He is accomplishing His purpose. Ephesians 1:11. He works all things according to the counsel of His will. We're not just left to the forces of nature and chance. God is working out history. Romans 8:28. We know that all things work together for good to those who love God. Ours is a benevolent sovereign, and therefore we have not only someone to thank, but we have a reason for giving thanks. And what does he say here in verse 14? "Now thanks be to God, who always leads us in triumph in Christ." always leads us in triumph in Christ. That is our reason for giving thanks. Let's unpack that a little bit. He's using some imagery here. For example, in the ancient world, in all the wars that were fought, he could be alluding to a Roman triumph. What is that? That is a parade. And in this parade, the conquering armies would be marching down the street amongst the cheering crowds. And the cheering crowds would throw flowers and they would burn incense. And so it was a very aromatic experience. But not only was it the conquering armies and their generals and the king, but paraded behind them was also the conquered armies and the spoils of war. For example, you could see in Rome the Arch of Titus, or it's sometimes called the Titus Gate. And some of the reliefs on there, that one on the left there, you can see etched in the stone there are the conquering armies, in the chariots, the king, the emperor, the generals, and the mighty horses, and the powerful armies, and they're marching in parade. And then the relief on the right, what is that? That is the people carrying the spoils of war. Can you see what they're carrying? They're carrying the articles from the temple. This arch, this Titus Gate, is a commemoration of the sack of Jerusalem in 70 AD. And this gives you an idea of what the event was like. A great parade down the streets. Many people, throngs of people lining the streets, cheering, throwing flowers, burning incense. And so you can sense it all as Paul speaks of Christ who always leads us in triumph in Christ. Now, the question can be asked, as he leads us in triumph, are we the conquerors or are we the conquered? What does Paul call himself in Romans chapter 1 and verse 1? Paul, a bond servant of Jesus Christ. That word bond servant, that's a nice way of saying slave. Paul, a slave, a captive of Jesus Christ. There's no sense of entitlement here. None at all. There is no sense of entitlement, but there is a joyful service recognizing that Christ is, as the benevolent sovereign and the Redeemer, the only one worthy of my joyful service. And therefore, I gladly march in His parade as His captive. No sense of entitlement at all. Listen to this. The bigger our sense of entitlement, the smaller our sense of gratitude. Let me say that again. The bigger our sense of entitlement, the smaller our sense of gratitude. Listen, you may not have recognized this yet or not, but this is a huge problem in our culture. And I'm not speaking of a class of people. We all struggle with this. The bigger our sense of entitlement, the smaller our sense of gratitude. Our entitlement mindset, and it's an attitude. It's not a class of people. It's an attitude in people. And it has led to the proliferation of lawsuits. When we don't get something we really want, we make a stink out of it. And we sue somebody. For example, the San Francisco Giants were once sued for passing out Father's Day gifts to men only. We can't stand to see someone else affirmed and celebrated and not me. It's discrimination, we say. What is that? That's a sense, that's a mindset of entitlement. What does Paul say in Galatians 2:20? I have been, what? Crucified with Christ. It is no longer I who live, But Christ lives in me, in the life which I now live in the flesh. I live by faith in the Son of God who loved me and gave himself for me. You see, no entitlement here whatsoever. As Christ leads us in triumph, I am his captive and I joyfully serve him. But there could be another sense also, because what does Paul say in Romans chapter 8, verse 37? In all of the adversities of this life and the groanings of creation, he says, in all these things, we are more than conquerors through him who loved us. Because there are armies of this world who would just as soon do away with us because we follow Christ, because we hold to what we call absolute truth and exclusive truth. And that really rubs the fur the wrong way of some people. And they would be happy to get rid of us. Paul says, in all these things, we are more than conquerors through him who loved us. Either way, whether Paul is saying we are conquerors or I am joyfully a captive of Jesus Christ, either way, he is saying this: I march to his drumbeat. I'm in his parade, not any other. And what does he mean by that? That he leads us in triumph in Christ and through us diffuses the fragrance of his knowledge in every place. If we can encapsulate what Paul means by this statement in verse 14, it is this: God is always and in every place carrying out the triumphant accomplishment of his purpose in which I have a part. Always and in every place, carrying out the triumphant accomplishment of his purpose in which I have a part. That is my reason for giving thanks. And why is it that I have a part? Because look what he says. He leads us in triumph. Two words: in Christ. Two most significant words in the New Testament: in Christ. If I am in Christ, it means that I have surrendered myself in faith to him. I have been reconciled to God through him. His righteousness has been counted to my account. That's what it means to be in Christ. And therefore, I am justified before holy God. He always leads us in triumph in Christ. Henry Nouwen says, to be grateful for the good things that happen in our lives is easy, but to be grateful for all of our lives, the good as well as the bad, the moments of joy as well as moments of sorrow, success as well as failures, the rewards as well as the rejections, that requires hard spiritual work. Still, we are only truly grateful people when we can say thank you for all that has brought us to the present moment. As long as we keep dividing our lives between events and people we would like to remember and those we would rather forget, we cannot claim the fullness of our beings as a gift of God to be grateful for. Let's not be afraid to look at everything that has brought us to where we are now and trust that we will soon see in it the guiding hand of a loving God. You see, ours is a benevolent sovereign. We have reason for giving thanks because God is always and in every place carrying out the triumphant accomplishment of his purpose in which I have a part. Why? Because I am in Christ. Now, two key concepts in this verse. One is always. Now, thanks be to God who always leads us in triumph. You know, I studied that. I looked at it in the Greek. Do you know what always means? It means all the time. Isn't that hard? Wow, aren't you glad to know that? Always means all the time. All the time. Whether times are grim or times are great. If I am in Christ, always God is carrying out the triumphant accomplishment of his purpose in which I have a part. It doesn't matter what I'm going through in my circumstances or context. God is carrying out the accomplishment of His purpose. Just remember, if you are in grim times, whatever you're in now is temporary. It is temporary. This too shall pass. Something far greater is yet to come. God is accomplishing His purpose. The pilgrims are responsible for this holiday this week. The pilgrims made 7 times more graves than huts. And yet they set aside a day for Thanksgiving. There is another concept besides always. Thanks be to God who always leads us in triumph. But at the end of the verse, and through us diffuses the fragrance of His knowledge, where? In every place. Okay, I looked at the Greek again. You know what that means? It means in every place. Is there something about that we don't get? Always, in every place. Every venue I find myself during the course of the day, regardless of the circumstance, that is a venue for ambassadorship. Wherever I find myself, whether it's in a cubicle or in a meeting or in a ball field or sitting behind a desk or working on the line, I am marching in His parade. As one who is more than a conqueror, as one who is a joyful captive of the one who made me and redeemed me. Marching in His parade. In every venue I find myself throughout the course of the waking day, I am salt and light. I am the fragrance of Christ, which is the meaning of in everything. Give thanks. In everything, give thanks. Why? Because we have someone to be thankful to. And two, because we have a reason for giving thanks. Always and in every place, God is carrying out the triumphant accomplishment of His purpose in which I have a part. Let's look at some examples from history. German pastor Martin Rinkhart served in the walled town of Eilenburg during the horrors of the 30 Years' War. That was from 1618 to 1648. Eilenburg became an overcrowded refuge. The fugitives suffered from epidemic and famine. In 1637, the year of the Great Pestilence, there were 4 ministers in Eilenburg. One abandoned his post. Pastor Rinkhart officiated the funeral of the other 2 pastors. As the only pastor left, he often conducted the funeral services for as many as 40 to 50 persons a day. In May of that year, his own wife died. By the end of the year, the refugees had to be buried in trenches without funeral services. You have a hymnal in the seat right in front of you. Turn to number 556. 556. Look way down at the bottom where it says text in all caps. Who wrote that? Martin Rinkhart. Living in a world dominated by death, Pastor Rinkhart wrote the following prayer for his children to offer to the Lord. Always in every place. Now thank we all our God with heart and hands and voices, who wondrous things hath done, in whom His world rejoices. Who from our mother's arms hath blessed us on our way with countless gifts of love and still is ours today. Isn't that amazing? It was harmonized by none other than Felix Mendelssohn. Always in every place leads us in triumph and through us diffuses the fragrance of His knowledge. Okay, let's move it to something a little more current, a little more contemporary. How about this year? Let's look over to the country of Nigeria. In Nigeria, there's the city of Jos. And they've faced significant, terrible things in recent times. A Nigerian Baptist church was attacked by Muslim extremists who burnt the church building and the house of the church's pastor. His name is Sunday Gomna. On the second Sunday after the violent outbreak, when the people of that church returned for worship, Pastor Gomna stood up and offered some words of gratitude. He said, "First, I am grateful that no one in my church killed anyone." I'm grateful for that too, by the way. Thank you for that. Apparently, during the chaos of the attacks, Pastor Sunday had gone around the community, and some of the Muslim people said, "Pastor, thank you for the way you taught your people. Your people helped to protect us." So Pastor Sunday was proud that his people did not kill any Muslims. Second, he said, "I am grateful that they did not burn my church." Now, by this time, people were looking at him like, "Okay, what do you mean by that?" Because we are in a mud hut that is not the church that we built. "Inasmuch as no church member died during this crisis, they did not burn our church. They only burned the building. So I am grateful that they did not burn my church. Third, I am grateful that they burned my house as well. If they had burned your house and not my house, how would I have known how to serve you as pastor? However, because they burned my house and all my possessions, I know what you are experiencing, and I will be able to be a better pastor to you. So I am grateful that they burned my house as well." Always and in every place diffuses through us the knowledge of Christ. He's leading us in triumph, always and in every place. What is Paul's context? Because he says this, "Now thanks be to God who always..." It's almost like verse 13, and there's some kind of royal disconnect between verse 13 and verse 14. So what's going on in Paul? Because what we have beginning at verse 14 all the way through chapter 7, verse 4, is what some scholars call the great digression. Paul is talking about his relationship with the Corinthians, his justification for not coming to visit them, his authority and his discipline of them for the misbehavior that's going on in the church. And he does that up to verse 13, and then all of a sudden, boom. "Now thanks be to God who always leads us in triumph." It's like, what's going on here, Paul? Look what he says. "Furthermore, when I came to Troas to preach Christ's gospel, and a door was opened to me by the Lord." So he's a missionary. He's an evangelist. He's proclaiming the good news of the gospel. And he goes to Troas, and there's a wide open door there, but something's going on inside of Paul. He's in turmoil. He's torn up inside. Why is that? Because of what's going on at the church at Corinth. He finds it difficult to focus on the ministry that God has entrusted to him because he's so torn up inside about what's going on at Corinth. And he's looking for news. They didn't have cell phones that day. Isn't that awful? You see, we're so used to immediate information, aren't we? How is he going to get his information? From Titus. He says, verse 13, "I had no rest in my spirit because I did not find Titus my brother, but taking my leave of them, I departed from Macedonia." He couldn't focus in ministry in Troas, so he goes on to Macedonia. And there he meets up with Titus. Titus comes and he brings the news. Turn over to chapter 7. Now, in the midst of this great digression from 2:14 all the way to 7:4, in the middle of that is chapter 5. And that's exactly why I wanted to teach through 2 Corinthians, because I want to get to chapter 5. I took 3 years to teach through Romans because I wanted to get to chapter 6. We'll be there in a couple years. All right, chapter 7, verse 5. "For indeed, when we came to Macedonia, our bodies had no rest, but we were troubled on every side. Outside, were conflicts, inside were fears. Nevertheless, God who comforts us, comforts the downcast, comforted us by the coming of Titus. Why is that? Titus had some news. Verse 7. And not only by his coming, but also by the consolation with which he was comforted in you, when he told us of your earnest desire, your mourning, your zeal for me, so that I rejoiced even more. There it is. The news he was looking for. Things at Corinth were okay. They had obeyed, they had disciplined, there was restoration, and the church is thriving. Before Paul knew that, he was affirming chapter 2, verse 14 in his own heart and mind. Thanks be to God, who always leads us in triumph in Christ and through us diffuses the knowledge. His knowledge in every place. What is he saying? Regardless of the circumstances, regardless of the toil that's going on inside of me, God is always and in every place carrying out the triumphant accomplishment of his purpose in which I have a part. God's will be done. And I have a part in that. What mind frame do we get from this? What attitude do we come away from this with? Because we all know that creation groans. Things are not as they ought to be. So let's look at it like this. Here's the a practical application for you and me in the day to day. Though things are not now as they ought to be, and they're not, because creation groans. We feel the groanings of creation. The video that we saw, there's good times, there's bad times. There's first moments, there's last moments. There's times that we have to say goodbye. There are times when things are short. There are times when things are hard. Okay. And when we recognize that though things are not now as they ought to be, I will focus on the one who redeems and restores. I'm not focused on how things are not as they ought to be. I don't deny it, but I'm not focused on it. I will focus on the one who redeems and restores. Instead of fixating on temporary fear or frustration, I will follow the guaranteed purpose of the one who makes all things new. That's who he is. You see, your object of trust is a person, the one who makes all things new. So look at it from this angle. This was Paul's angle. This was his, the angle means it's his perspective. So look at it from this angle. And if we look at it, when we have the fragrance of thanks means that when we look at life from this angle as Paul did, it is the angle of Christ, then that will lead me to the attitude of Christ, the mind of Christ. And that will lead me to the aroma of Christ. That will diffuse, God will diffuse through me the aroma of Christ. That's the fragrance of thanks. And it all comes down to perspective. Is my perspective informed by the authoritative, inspired word of the infinite God who loves me and has redeemed me? So I leave you today with a question. What would spread the aroma of Christ more than my joyful submission to Him always in every place? Always in every place. Think about that. My joyful submission to Him. Why? Because I'm marching in His parade. I march to His drumbeat. He leads me in triumph. The Apostle Paul said to the Thessalonians, in everything, give thanks. What an aroma that would be, hmm?